Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Concerts That Made Us. I'm your host, Brian, and as always, find us and follow us on social media. Just search for Concerts That Made Us podcast. And rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps the show grow. Now, before I tell you about our guest this week, I just want to give a big shout out to booking agent Fuzz for securing us this interview. Now, my guest is JDK from the Irish rock band agency Panic. And before we get talking to JD, we're going to take a listen to his song PTSD. So now, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Hey, JD, you're very welcome to Concerts That Made Us this evening.
No bother, man. How's it going? It's lovely to be here. Thanks for the invite, actually.
No problem.
Shout out to our brother Robert, I suppose, on the Monster Fuzz, himself and Emo.
Exactly. I'm telling you, I've been thinking I'm going to have to start paying Rob if he keeps sending great musicians towards me.
The Monster Fuzz donation.
Yeah. He's doing great stuff, though, with his podcast. I absolutely love it.
Brilliant stuff now. And if you haven't heard of folks, get onto it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if they're listening to this podcast, they've definitely heard me go on and on about how much I love it.
I'm sure it's mental stuff. Mental.
Yeah, exactly. So your band, Agency Panic, we just heard your song PTSD. Would you like to tell us a bit about it?
PTSD. But PTSD basically was a, let's just say, the end of the combination of the lockdown of the country and sure, the world, I suppose. And everything that was going on, social media, and you could see society was starting to go left, right, and center. You know, it was political polarization everywhere. And sure, you know, yourself, you could see the cancellation culture kicking in. And so it was pretty much just a PTSD. I was thinking to myself, when this finishes, will society be left with PTSD after this? Well, that's kind of the...
It's a very good question, actually.
Where the premise of it came from?
I always think to myself, actually, would we even reach the stage where we will have PTSD, or will we just keep free falling? Society will just keep getting worse and worse.
Well, that's like the... It's like the seven stages of empire, I suppose. Did you ever hear those?
No.
It's like the Roman Empire talk, like you had the pioneers, then you had the conquest, then stage three, I think it's commerce, affluence, I think stage four, intellect, I think is five, and then decline and decadence. So what stage would you think we're in?
Yeah.
I know, folks, we're going to cheer you up. This is not the way this podcast should be starting.
Yeah. Well, if we start down low, at least we can only go up.
We can only go up. Dead right now.
And are you the main lyricist then for the band? Or?
Yeah, I do most. Well, anyone can chip in. There's no, you know, but I pretty much do most of the lyrical writing, yeah.
So you're obviously you're on vocals. Who else is in the band?
And we've Tubbs on guitars, Lee then is on bass, and then Harvey then plays the drums.
Ah. For some reason I thought a guy called Tubbs should be on the drums.
Yeah, well, that's a good one.
Tell me a bit about the band then. How did you come together? Did you know each other long? How did you all decide to form?
I've known Lee since I was about 15. I know Tubbs since he was a whippersnapper. Harvey, I've known Harvey's on the music scene the last 30, 35 years in Wexford. And we've all pretty much been in and out of different projects and bands, I'd say, over that span of time with each other. Playing live, playing in original stuff, playing in cover bands, playing in stuff like that. So I pretty much played with Lee almost all my life. I've known Tubbard since he was about 14. He was only a little chiseler. But we've known each other all our lives. We've been in and out of stuff. Agency Panic is just a project where we decided to, when you see 50 tracks building up on a computer and you set yourself, right, it's time to start down. So, you know, they're found in 100 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be an odd situation now. And that'd be an archaeological artifact.
And that's fact. That's pretty much where we were. So it was just, let's start getting it in the studio. Let's get tracks done. Let's get concept and ideas out there. And let's start actually, let's pretty much shit or get off the pot.
Yeah. And, was a natural progression towards the style of music that you played? Did you all automatically just agree that's what you would sound like, or was it a natural sort of thing once you got into the studio?
Well, it's a weird one because there's no kind of we are what we is kind of the motto. Like, it's all primarily rock or primarily alternative music that we'd all be into. Be it even Tubbard is into dance music and stuff as well. So there's a wide range of, let's say, influences from like the Helmet to Tool to, you know what I mean, Kate Bush to fucking, I don't know, Primus, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Nine Inch Nails, you could try in a lot. So there is no constraints on what we try to sound like, if you know what I mean. I've heard people come back saying sound and so on. So you get that all the time anyway, but
yeah.
You are what you eat, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a.
We just eat a lot, so God knows what we could come out with next.
That's what to say about music, though. It is subjective. Each listener will hear something different.
Yeah, that's it. You know? So, and everybody's always, you've always got your comparisons as well, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. You'll always be compared to someone. Hopefully it'll be someone you actually like.
Yeah, and that's it. And sure, look at, you know, the old saying, you can't be all things to everybody, so.
Yeah, exactly. But I was looking at some of your music videos, actually. And Jesus, if there was awards for music videos, you guys actually deserve it, because some work must have went into making the music video for, is this Panic?
The debut single there.
Yeah. It's like a mini movie in itself.
That's Mr. Paul Seals. He's a genius. Yeah, that was quite an experience. All right, trying to put that together. You know yourself, man. We're on a budget of zero, so trying to do it on a low budget was a challenge in itself. But it was a fair accomplishment for him, in fairness.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it. It's, to be honest with you, you'd feel like you were watching MTV or, you know, the old rock music channels, and it was actually a proper music video on one of them channels by, you know, the likes of Nine Inch Nails or something like that. It's just the quality of it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man. Nice one. I'll pass on the message. He'll be delighted.
Good. But I've heard there's a few Easter eggs in that video. If the listeners would like to go and have a look at it, see if they can spot some.
Yes.
Would you like to share one or two?
Well, I'll give you one then, right? There's a guy called Donald Ewan Cameron. Never heard of him, no?
No.
He was basically in the Tavistock, involved with the Tavistock Institute of Human Resources, which was created basically after, I think it was World War I, in Oxford, by the Royal Institute for International Affairs. Funded, of course, by one of the only, David Rockefeller, or the Rockefeller Foundation. And he was conducting tests out of Allen Memorial Institute, I think it was, which is funny, actually. I was supposed to be haunted as well, going back to your Copper Kelly interview there. When you sort of laughed us all, that was deadly, no, I have to say.
Oh, thanks a million, I appreciate it.
When he was going on about, I don't know how he did that, I wouldn't be down there for 5 minutes now, to be honest with you. On his own as well, doors closing and all, come on now, Copper, what are you thinking? Like, what's not serious money?
yeah, exactly. Jeez, I don't know. I don't think I'd be able to be there after dark inside anyway. I love the idea of it, but I think I'd fucking shit myself now and run out the door.
But so this place is supposed to be haunted as well, for sure. Obviously, when you think of, I think it was between 57 and 64, he was conducting mind control on unconsenting patients and my dad.
Oh, right.
Projects which were like sensory deprivation or LSD or electroshock therapy or stuff basically to control the human psyche.
A bit like MK Ultra in that sense.
Well, it was part of one of the MK Ultra. I just didn't want to say that. You're thinking about football hats and all that, so.
Yeah. I know I'm one of the worst for stuff like that. I could go off on tangents for hours about conspiracy theories and MK Ultra, stuff like that.
All right. We're at home then, are we? But so that's basically who he was. I've seen like a couple of documentaries about survivors, we'll say, of some of his sensory deprivation stuff. Like basically putting people in an induced coma for maybe up to 2 weeks, and then basically playing the same recording over and over again for the 3 weeks and then taking them out.
Oh, Jesus.
So that's just one of the fun little games that we're playing. But anyway, he'd be one of the Easter eggs in there. There's other people in there as well, if you listen closely to them. And little images and stuff, if you can pick up on them, sure. Have fun. What's this? There was an M on that someone said it to me the other day, actually, and I'd never heard of it before. Oh, yeah, coded music.
Coded music?
Yeah. Someone said, it's good coded music. And I said, thanks for that.
You must get a lot of positive feedback about it, though.
Yeah, it's them, man. Listen, for what we are and what we're trying to do, like we're only a small, we're literally just four guys who are just 9 to 5 paying mortgages, got kids, just, you know what I mean? We just happen to be able to play music. And we've been, as you know yourself, Wexford is littered with talent. Like, there is talent seeping out of this county.
Oh, yeah.
In all forms, not just in music, like in art, in, you know what I mean, painting, and you go through any of the arts, like, there we've even, you know, theatre here. Like, so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a cultural hub of Ireland.
Yeah. And there is serious talent here.
Without a doubt. It's a pity, though, it's not showcased more, you know?
Yeah. To be honest, if you think about it, like, for the size of it and where it is, we are kind of punching by the above our weight. Like, they even gave us the National Theatre right at the hall, like, you know what I mean? So
I suppose, actually, yeah.
What is it? The second, sure, isn't the opera festival the second biggest opera festival on the planet? Like,
is it? I didn't realize it was actually that big now.
Yeah, yeah. It's a certain genre that they do that's very niche. And a lot of the opera heads like that. So,
jeez. I remember actually years ago walking by it. Jeez, I was probably only about 9 or 10 now. And I remember Gay Byrne and Jerry Ryan in tuxes going into it.
Oh, yeah. You probably don't remember the Oyster Festival and all then, no?
I know the name. I've heard of it. I wouldn't actually have any memories of it now.
The Mussels and the Oyster Festival, and then you had the Opera Festival all around the same time, and then singing pubs, and then you have, oh, there's a lot. That's a good little hub, like, when it gets going. Like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it really is. Hopefully it'll be able to get back to normal now after all this crap is over.
Man, stop. I wish it had just come on. Like.
Yeah, yeah. It's a slow road, but hopefully we're near the end of it.
We'll see what the story is now come October and November again.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I digress. Sorry, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the music video.
Oh, yeah, the cookies. Yeah. So that's one of the... There's one for you, anyway. Donald, Ewan, Cameron. Just check them out.
Perfect, perfect. Where was this? Where was the shot, actually? I take it was shot in around Wexford, was it?
Yeah, yeah. We shot it down in Balcogley.
Ah.
And then the rest of it, then all the film part of it, we shot all over Wexford.
I was thinking I could spot a few familiar places, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you said, you have numerous songs. You, when you can get together, you go into the studio, lay down some tracks. It must be hard to find the time to actually get together. As you said, you all have lives, mortgages. Is it tricky to set out a time frame where all four of you are available?
Yeah, it can be a time share, but as you know yourself, with the last, what is it now, 14 months are we in? Since
yeah.
The country went into probably the longest lockdown in the world.
Mm.
Yeah, it's been hard, especially then. We've got two tracks sitting there for the last year, we'll say, and we just can't get at them. So it's been frustrating, but at least we have a start on two of them anyway, when we get back in, so.
So we normally talk about gigs and concerts,
mm-hmm.
Hence the name Concerts That Made Us. Now, you guys haven't had a chance to play gigs yet, have you?
No, not at the minute, no.
Is there any hope or any sign of being able to play gigs when the pandemic ends?
If we could get a guitarist to come off the road, yeah. Robert is a sound engineer, you see, so he's in and out.
Mm.
So yeah, hopefully, look, in the future, we're looking to get playing. Obviously, that's the bread and butter, that's the juice of it. Like,
yeah,
and the way music is now, sure, the only way you'll make money out of it really is playing live. And sure, we can talk about that later on if you want. I'll give you a clue, Napster, but sure, we'll leave it there. But so yeah, look, as far as playing, it's funny because as far as playing with each other, we played with each other pretty much in numerous projects and bands over the last, I'd say, 30 odd years. Hmm. I've been playing with Lee. I've been playing music with Lee since we were like 15.
Jeez.
So yeah, no, yeah. So we know each other inside out. It's, you know what I mean. So, but as far as HC Panic goes, most definitely, we're bowling to get going. Like, it's just a matter of getting another few tracks out, get a set list under our belt, and off we go. Like.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it funny nowadays though, the way it's kind of, it's almost completely the opposite. Like, I'm sure when you were growing up, you know, same as when I was, bands, especially local bands, it was like a dream for them to record a song, you know, and release a song. And then, you know, they played gigs until they were able to record. But nowadays it's so easy to record, you know, you have people recording in their bedroom, that it's the opposite, you know, people record and release songs so they can actually play places. It's kind of a...
play live, it's after completely switching. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
But that all came with the, you know what I mean, the greedy record companies. Like.
Yeah.
That's where that all began. And as I just said to you about Napster, like,
mm.
you go back to that time when, like, for instance, I remember when I was growing up, you know, you'd save up two bob and you go down and you buy the album. Like, you come yeah. home, you'd stick it on, you'd have the inlay card out, you'd read the lyrics, you'd know who produced it, you'd know who fucking recorded it, you know where it was recorded, you know what day it was recorded. It was almost like transporting to a point with music. It was a whole experience. And then you had the package, you had the whole thing there. It felt like you were, I don't know, without sounding fucking, you know what I mean? Just, you were more connected to the album, to the music, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas then we got the likes of Napster and people started downloading internet. Then we had MP3 players. Yeah, you know what I mean? Next thing, all of a sudden, Spotify. Now music is almost treated as, you know, almost say, fast food.
Yeah, actually, that's a good analogy.
Stick your track on your playlist, and it's, you know what I mean? There's no concept idea. There's no complete listening to a band. There's no, like, maybe it's just me, I'm old school, but I'll go out and I still, if I hear an album that I like, I go and get it on CD.
Mm.
Just to have it on CD and to be able to listen to the whole album from start to finish. And I've even gone that bad now where I've gone back and even started getting records because they sound better.
Yeah.
And I've gone completely, now, as you're saying, we've switched back. I'm completely switching back. Even albums I have that are on CD that I think are banging, like, let's say, Prodigy or Rage Against the Machine's first album, or what else did they get there? And also, oh, Ministry's Psalm 69 album. Just albums that you think are going to be absolutely banging on the vinyl. Like, and they are, like, the difference is absolutely chalk and cheese. So, kids, convert back the vinyl. Get off the internet. Stop downloading.
You're right, though. You're completely right. I totally agree. You know, it's all about having the physical copy of the album or the song in your hands. You know, like, if Spotify goes bust in the morning, all the songs you've saved to your phone are going to be gone, you know? You're more so just renting them songs when you're streaming them, you know?
Pretty much, yeah. And Bandcamp is probably, I think, the best streaming, selling kind of bands formed. I think it's actually ran by bands. I'm not quite sure who runs it, but whatever way it's ran slick. It's got the best playback quality of sound. And they pretty much, you can do your own business on it. You can kind of, what's the time treasure? You ever listen to Adam Curry? No.
No, no.
Shame on you, Ned. Shame. he's the podfather.
Oh, right.
And No Agenda is his shtick. His podcast. But yeah, he pretty much invented it. But yeah, he has a time treasure. What is it? Your time treasure and talent is his model.
Uh-huh.
Monetary model. I'm going off on one here now, but
I'll work away.
But that's pretty much what Bandcamp is. You kind of give what you want. You know what I mean? If you want to give it, you can put a limit on it. You can say, right, give us a quid or whatever, and then you can, if you want to give 5, you can. If you want to give 10, you can.
Yeah.
That's sort of the way. But that's probably the best. But as far as Spotify, unless you're Joe Rogan, it's like, I don't know, isn't it something like 100,000 streams or 10,000 streams? Maybe we'll go with 10,000 just to be nice. 10,000 streams and a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's kind of, But and as we were saying, it has belittled what music is to a point.
Hmm.
There's nothing special about it anymore, if you know what I mean. As you were saying, like, I played gigs when I was 14, 15, 16, trying to save up. We all in band, the band together, trying to save up to get, as you said, a day or two, maybe, if you were lucky, if you had enough money, in the studio.
Yeah, definitely. And it's destroying music, in my opinion, you know, because you're getting lots of people as well that are capable now of releasing tracks, and they've no business releasing tracks, you know?
Yeah, we go back to the subjective thing there, though, really, don't you?
Yeah, true, actually. That's a good point.
So it's like courses for courses. I have absolutely no problem with everybody doing everything. But it's, as you said, it has worked. It's like everything. It's like the atomic bomb, for instance. Like, it gave us fucking nuclear power, but, you know, gave us the capacity to fucking ruin ourselves in a second. But we've been given the internet, and now people like me, even for talk's sake, we're able to do what we're able to do and get music out and get people listening and being on a podcast like this with yourself, and you know what I mean? Whereas it also gives everybody in the world the opportunity to do it, and then it kind of dilutes the water a little bit. There's so much music there, and there's so many good artists there, even. You just get lost in the sea of music. So it's very hard to stick out from the crowd, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that was my next point. It must be very hard to stand out and get noticed.
Yeah, that's 30 ago. We've just been talking about it. You're a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And that's the good, look, don't get me wrong, that's also a good thing. The more the merrier, like, sort of thing. But as we're just saying, it's like you're in a shoal of shale, if you know what I mean. Like, you're just getting lost.
Yeah. Well, it's good for the consumer of music, but it's...
But is it either? Like, as we've just discussed, you're kind of losing that little bit of magic, like, with the artist or with the band or with the music because of that. Like, because it's been, as I said, it's like I'm fucking getting a Big Mac. Like.
True.
So I don't know. It has its good points. It has its bad points. It's like everything. There is no meeting in the middle, kind of, is there? It's a weird one.
Yeah. It is. It's an odd one.
But what it has done, right, is it destroyed fucking record companies. Didn't know what they just didn't see it coming. Mm. And how they didn't see it coming is beyond me. When people started streaming the music then and stopped buying albums, serious fucking decline in profits. But the bands now are having to break their neck. If you look at like the likes of AC/DC, Cybertoxic, they were on that 3-year tour there. The boys were in, I don't know, it must be in the fucking 60s.
Yeah.
Now they're probably well set anyway, but the only way they were making money off new material was to get out and start gigging. You're not going to get it from record sales. You get out, you gig, and you sell your merch, and that's how they were making the money. Serious money at that, on my dad.
Yeah.
This is kind of where you're at. Like, whereas, as you were saying beforehand, with record sales and all, bands had a little bit more, I don't know, maybe leeway, not relaxing time, if you know what I mean. Yes, they go out on the tour, but then they'd obviously have a bit of downtime after it. But it seems like, sure, AC/DC on what, 3 years nearly straight?
Yeah, at their age as well. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned them, actually. I had tickets to see them last year, and it's after being rescheduled twice now.
You were saying that, actually. Yeah. I remember hearing that. You were saying that at Copper, weren't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You just went into that, or you brought it up, didn't you? You had to bring it up.
Huh?
You just had to bring it up, of course, didn't you? You do know what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to think now.
That Chinese democracy. Are you sitting there and went, no. The only good thing about that is book ahead.
Hey, you can blame Copper for that. He's the one that brought it up. I was trying to just glide past it.
I was sitting there listening and I was laughing. But the only thing good about that was book ahead.
I'll always prefer the earlier stuff.
So do you think they're going to go, or do you think you're going to get to see him?
Well, it's after being rescheduled. It was supposed to be, I think, this June. And it's been rescheduled until fucking May 2022 now. So And then you have the thing of, with them, they could cancel themselves at the last minute as well.
A half an hour before the show, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, that's the first, it's funny, right? When I was get into it, sure, that's the first band I ever went to see was Slane 92.
Really?
Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, it was really for Faith No More.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was a massive Faith No More, mad, still am, mad head. Like. And Mike Patton fella is just unnaturally good. He's just unreal. But they made us wait for about 3.5 hours that day as well.
Oh man, are you serious?
Yeah. Between Faint No More and them, there was about 3.5. They were supposed to go on, I think it was like 6, and they didn't come on something like 9:30 or 10:00 or something. Oh, stupid.
For fuck's sake. The
sun wasn't going down and the lights wouldn't be seen. Waxel.
He's a total diva though, isn't he? He's just
brilliant. No, sure you couldn't. Sure you, all you can do is laugh. Laugh at the antics. That time in and recalls the riot that time in 90 what year was that? I think it was 91 or 92. But I think he just walked off stage and they just wrecked the place. That was actually, I think that was just before the Use Your Illusion tour. I can't remember what, I think it was 92, maybe 91, 92, somewhere around there.
I would have said it was maybe 93, no?
Could have been. When was, sure, let me see. You have me trying to use my old brand now. let me see. I can only, this is how you do it. You link things together, right? So Terminator 2, when was that released? We go from there, right? So Terminator 2, what year was that?
Oh, I want to say 91.
Well, there you go, then. Sure, You Could Be Mine was the soundtrack for that.
It was, actually. Yeah.
And it's funny because I was only looking through my old records down there the other day, and I pulled out a program from that gig.
Oh.
In pretty decent condition as well. So, I was quite chuffed about that.
You're right, too. That'd be a treasured possession now.
Yeah, that was a cracking gig, man. Faint No More were absolutely unnaturally good. Like, it was when they had Jim Martin and all playing guitar.
Oh, fuck.
And played Bobic. It was just before Angel Dust. And it was basically the Real Thing tour. And I love Will Picker from Mars. I played that like, man, I couldn't believe it. It was class.
Isn't that some feeling, though, when you go to see a band and they play your favorite song? You know, if you weren't expecting it or anything.
Yeah, when you're thinking to yourself, even when you go in, you go, nah, they're not going to play that. Like, it's too obscure. And then they play it. And they're just like, fucking hell.
You almost feel like standing there in the crowd and screaming out, you played that for me, didn't you? You played that for me.
Yeah. That's happened a few times now. That's happened at a few gigs.
Oh, really?
Where I've been there going, or in the obscure has just popped out and I'm going, yes, Eddie the Cure. The last gig we were at was up in Malahide Castle. Is that it?
Yeah.
The Cure. And first song to play is Burn from The Crow. I could not believe it. Like, I was just sitting there going, you have to be shitting me.
Especially that, though. That can't be something to play very often.
That's a mad song because that wasn't, I don't even think that's on any of the, I love The Cure, like, big into me Cure, like, and it's not, from what I can remember anyway, it's not on any of the actual albums. I think it was a B-side on one of the earlier singles, like, and somehow, I think that was written in 85 or 6 or something. It's written really long time before The Crow was released as a film, like. Now, look, this could be all speculation, so just all rock folklore, you know yourself. But as far as I can remember, my knowledge is, I think it was around 85, 86, that song was written, and it ended up on that soundtrack, and you think it was written for that film.
Yeah.
Lyrically, like, even and everything, it's brilliant. But when they played that, man, it was absolutely unreal. There's some bands, they've got better with time.
It's funny you should mention that exact gig, actually. I've had a guest on before who was at that gig as well.
And are we concurring?
I'm trying to remember whether he mentioned 2 Cure gigs. He said one was unreal, but he said he left early with the other one. He said that the sound quality was shit. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Right.
But the sound quality obviously wasn't bad in your opinion for that one. So it must have been the other one.
It's like all of men for one or two, and then it's usually sorted out by then.
Yeah, true. So that covers your first and your last gig. And it's actually the first time I've never even had to ask the guest about them.
Well, sure, man, where do you want to go? I'm not messing with you. Sure, we could go from, I've seen like Nine Inch Nails, System of a Down, Tool, Slayer, Therapy, Ozzy Osbourne, Black Label Society, Helmet, White Snake, believe it or not, absolutely fucking blew the sock up. David Coverdale, unreal.
Really?
I think we were sitting the wife for trying to work it out. It was when he played with, it was Whitesnake, Gary Moore were supposed to be playing. I was going up to see Whitesnake and she was going up to see Gary Moore. and when we were pulling into the car park, they were stopping people and just saying, look, Gary Moore is not playing tonight, he's sick or whatever. Like, so if you're wanting her to fund, you can refund or you can go into the gig and it's Whitesnake, blah, 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 whatever. I think I had another band. I can't remember who the other band was before him. But they kind of, you know, spread it out their set list a bit longer.
Yeah.
But Riddell, I think he must have been no younger than 58. No word of a lie, man. You want to hear the pipes on this fella. Just shockingly good. Like,
another one that's got better with age, so.
Still has it. Like, just unbelievable. That was a great gig, actually. Seen Pearl Jam, Pumpkins, Tori Amos. Seen her a couple of times. She's fairly savvy, too.
Right, here's one for you. So, what's the worst gig or worst experience at a gig you've had?
Yeah. Experience, worst. Probably not the gig itself, right? But more so everything that surrounded the gig.
Right.
Because it was, I've seen Tool a couple of times, seen him in the Ozfest that time in Punchestown when Ozzy pulled out. And they moved everyone up the bill, so Tool got the headline. So that was fairly, they were fucking absolutely unreal at me. And then I seen him in the Point then for, I think it was the 10,000 Day Tour. And we couldn't get a taxi. We were in a hotel. It was about, I don't know, 11 or 12 of us or something. We just couldn't get a taxi between us all because no one was fitting in and blah, blah, blah. So we ended up walking and it started pissing rain and we got absolutely, we were like drowned cats when we got there. And everything was soaking and you were going, you know yourself. Now look at, we dried off fairly quick with sweat. So that was probably the worst, if you want to call it the worst experience, really.
Yeah, yeah.
They were a bit slow that night, all right, boys, but I think we're on the Guinness the night before. They were a bit laid back. They played 10,000 Days as well, which is like, you know, we're at a gig here, come on, lads. That's not David Gray we've come to see, but no, but you know what I'm saying, it was like up till then, like the rat playing Stinkfist and the rat playing Nightmare, and you know, there were places banging, like they had everyone eating out of their hands, and then they just completely decided to tone it all down.
Jesus.
The lights down and get out the lasers and a grand, that's all well and good, like, but then they start playing 10,000 Days, which is about 10,000 hours long as well. But you know what I mean? And it kind of just kind of sucked the life out of the gig and they couldn't kind of get it back then when they came back.
Ah, Jesus.
You know what I'm saying? Can you understand kind of the dynamic? Yeah. Like it was a weird one. But other than that, that was probably the worst gig I was at. If you were to say it was.
Reminds me of a Tommy Tiernan joke, actually, where he's an Irish session and the music is lifting and everyone feels like they're about to take off, and then some old one cracks out a fucking sad, depressing song and all. They're depressed and fed up for the rest of the night.
So fucking true. Man, I got relatives that live in the heartland of Craggy Island, as we say. Right, and it is so true what you just said there, like, brilliant.
Oh, it is though, and it happens at every session. It'll always happen.
Oh yeah, you'll always get them. Sure, look how we even start. I think it's just the Irish personality. There's a bit of melancholy sewn into our fabric.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
20 years of oppression.
what would you count as, or who would you count as the best gig you've ever been to? So that'll be tough to narrow down, I'd say.
Yeah, because there's a couple in there that you'd kind of, you think to yourself, well, look, for pure musicianship, there's different reasons. If you get me, Nine Inch Nails is probably the best for energy, for power, for just performance, just for fucking gig itself, because I just, the man is like modern day Beethoven.
Yeah.
So pretty much for me, it would have been that one. That was up at Oxygen, the headline one of the stages up there. And that was absolutely, I had to wait. I had to go through the Ting Tings, and I had to go through, Katy Perry, and I had to go through, you know what I mean? There was a lot went into that, brother, no messing.
How did you hold it together?
Jane's Addiction, they weren't too bad. Dave Navarro was pretty tasty that day, I have to say. But yeah, and then they just came out and played Burn, kicking off, and that was it then.
Fuck.
Lane the Sinker, I was in, one of my favourite songs. So, like, there's another one of those where they played the song that you didn't expect. He played it first as well. So yeah, Nine Inch Nails. Velvet Revolver was a bit of a shocker.
Really?
Yeah, like, look, the first album was out, I knew what it was about, pretty tasty. She, Slash it there, and she had a bit of Duff, and she had, what's his name, from Stonehenge Pilots, Scott Weiland. And so you knew you were, it was like Ron Seal, you knew what you were getting on the team sort of thing.
Yeah.
Me and Lee were sitting beside each other for that one. We weren't actually down on the floor, we were up in the heavens. And man, it was the loudest gig it was the loudest thing I've ever experienced. Came out and we couldn't fucking hear a sausage for about 3 hours. Like, we were blown out of it. But in a good way, now, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But man, the vibration, obviously in Senate, like at the time, like the vibrations that were coming through the fucking seats with the pure pump. It was deadly now. So that was a shocker. I seen the Pumpkins on the Siamese Dream tour. That was a good gig.
Really?
That was deadly, yeah. And they had been in the studio and they had recorded the infamous Melancholy, whatever it was, Sadness. Was that it?
Yeah.
That next album. And they played, I think, Zero and A Bullet with Butterfly Wings.
Oh, man.
And they played three off that. We hadn't heard them, like, it's not been out, like, it hadn't been released at the time. Yeah, the Butterfly Wings was just, I was just like, what the fuck? Absolutely savagery. Like,
I was just going to say to hear them before you knew of the songs or before, like, the album had been released must have been an experience in itself.
Sure, it was because they played the three in a row. I think Zero was this. I can't remember what the first one was. And then they played Zero. I remember Zero, the riff in Zero. And I was pumping. And then they played the other one. Then sure, you know yourself.
I could say everyone just lost their shit altogether.
Yeah, it was mad. That was actually in the SFX. Do you remember that place?
No, whereabouts was that?
Oh, I think it was on the north side from what I can remember. But it was just a fucking warehouse, man. I tell you, health and safety, you wouldn't get near. You wouldn't be allowed to store crates in it now at this stage. That's the truth. It was that fucking raw. It was literally just a big shed. And the sound in it now wouldn't have been great. And a lot of big, massive Tool played in that. I remember the first time they played in Ireland, a brother-in-law of mine got tickets. So it was in the SFX. Really hard. If it was a man in the SFX, I think it was only 2,500, 3,000, I think, the most.
Yeah.
So it was usually someone like Tool would come. They were fairly obscure at the time when they came. It was before, it was just after the DVD box set thing they had released, The Salival, was that the name of it? And it was just before Lateralis was released. So they played in the SFX, I think it was only two nights. So it was like fucking gold dust trying to get your hands on tickets.
I could imagine. It's very Irish though, isn't it? It's like, oh, I'm going to see a rock band. Where are you going to see him? In a fucking shed.
In a fucking hay barn. That's where it's going.
You wouldn't get it anywhere else, like.
You wouldn't get away with it nowadays, though. No. there's money to be made in health safety now. But yeah, that was fucking, yeah, that's fine. I just remember that now, the SFX. Christ, that was some place. Remember seeing Pearl Jam in the Old Pint? The Old Pint wouldn't have been too bad. It was all right, I suppose. I think the best venue in this country is Vicar Street.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what we were saying with the SFX. I think it's 5,000 in Vicar Street. Maybe it's a little bit less. I don't know. But it's not. I think it's no more than about 5. So it's the same sort of thing. If there's someone fairly tasty playing there, it's really hard to get your hands on. You have to be on the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I've seen Tori Amos there now, and that was some experience. Like, it was just basically her, one piano on one side. I think it was an organ on the other side, and that was it. Tables and chairs, people coming over serving you drink.
Fuck.
I was fucking the man with that. That was a buzz. That was an experience.
I'd say so.
And she was absolutely, you ever listen to Tori Amos?
Yeah, yeah.
Stop, child prodigy, sure, you know what I mean? She's late. But, yeah, seen her and seen her in the Olympia, I think it was. Last time she was here. So she was with a band that night. So it was a bit different.
Here's one that'll throw you, actually. What's your best concert experience that didn't involve the musician you were going to see?
Yeah, I'd say probably, right? We went to see, a mate of mine went to see Steve Vai up in Vicar Street.
Right.
And two things. The first guy he played before him was absolutely unbelievable. Eric Sardines was his name. Never heard him. Haven't heard him since. But boy, fuck, could this fella shred. Man, could this fella shred guitar? Like, no word of a lie. Absolute animal. Like, brilliant. Brilliant performer. Brilliant songs. He was that good. My mate that was with me went out and bought his album. Right? You know yourself when you be there and you see someone and you're going out.
Yeah.
And then an added little bonus was Billy Sheen. Do you ever hear of Billy Sheen? He's playing Mr. B. Savage bass player. Like, he was actually playing the bass coming in Steve Vai that night. So that was another little bonus.
Jesus.
So yeah, Sardines, he was tasty treats. Remember we went to see, myself and Tobias went to see Slint one night up in the Button Factory there a few years ago. Do you ever, you know, the Button Factory in Dublin?
Oh yeah, yeah, I've been there.
Did you ever hear of Slint?
Slink?
Slint.
No, I haven't actually.
They're a mad obscure. Had one album.
Right.
Spiderland is called. But they're just a weird, obscure band. And they had this one album and they just disappeared back in the 90s and just started to turn again. And Pub said to me, Slinder playing up in the Button Factory. You fancy coming up? Like, check them out. We went up and there was a young one playing. She's from Waterford. Katie Kim.
Right.
Name you about?
No, not at all.
Mate, when we're finished this interview, go check out Katie Kim.
I'll have to.
A resident of the Waterford, and she's absolutely unbelievable. But she was another, we went to see Slint and came across Katie Kim.
It's a nice little treat for you.
Yeah, it's mad. Like you're just saying, like you go to things and maybe sometimes it's the first act that catches you. Well, sure, we went to see Ozzy that night, sure, and Zach basically played Black Label, were the support group. Like,
yeah.
So we got the whole night of Zach Wilde. Like, it was fucking amazing. Ozzy coming out and pulling his pants down. Oh, Jesus Christ. Just the firing buckets of water all over everyone. Just mental.
That definitely must be up there.
That would have been a good night, yeah. That was actually a great gig, yeah. Zach Wilde all night. Yeah, I never actually looked at it that way.
I think now is a perfect time to hear your song, The Middle.
Aye.
Do you want to set it up and introduce it first?
I'm not sure. This is a little ditty about a little experience in the middle of Amsterdam. Enjoy.
Right. That was I think that'll go down very nicely with the listeners now. That's a tasty song.
Thanks very much.
No problem. Come here, actually. We'll step away from concerts for a minute. I've heard a rumor that you were roped in as a session singer. Would you like to shed a little light on that?
A session singer? Yeah. You heard on the underground, did you?
Yeah.
That actually came from Harvey.
Right.
Harvey gave me a call one night and said, "All right, man, there's these guys in Dublin that I know that are wanting to basically they're saving up and getting ahead of recording time. They've recorded a demo basically of, I think it was four songs, and asked, did you want to go up and put down some vocals on them?" And I was like, "Okay, what do you mean?" Like, and he said, "Well, sure, just they want you to go up and just put singing on them. Like, they just want to kind of have them, like, to have the songs recorded and just want singing on them." And I was thinking, okay, that's a weird one. It's not like, you know, you get in a guitarist or you get in a drummer or, you know.
Yeah.
Singing is kind of different because, especially, well, as I said to Harvey, I said, well, what's the crack? Have they got lyrics? Have they got ideas what they want the songs are about? And he was like, no, I don't really think so. And they just kind of, and they said, I'll pay you for it. Like, I was kind of like going, okay, now I'm interested. But so, yeah, I got in contact with them then. And they just said, yeah, do your worst. Do what the fuck you want, man. So I did. I think two of the tracks are actually on YouTube. Alienist is the name of the band. So that was it. Yeah, I just wrote lyrics. Went up to Dublin, hadn't met the lads. The drummer had recorded all the drums and he went off to find himself in India.
Right.
So, oh man, I'm not messing with you. So I went up on a Friday night. Went over to one of the lads gaffs, had a few drinks, you know, got to know him a little bit, had chats, and then sure, I got up next morning, went into the studio and just put the tracks down. The lads sent them off, got mastered and got covers and all done, the artwork and all, and sent me down a couple of copies of.
Jeez, that's it's not one you hear happening every day anyway.
No, it was a funny one though. But it was an enjoyable one, I won't lie. It was enjoyable and a challenge at the same time, do you know what I mean? Obviously, having never met these people before or whatever, and they're giving me their music and kind of put my interpretation on what I thought their music was about and blah blah blah, you know yourself.
Yeah,
but they were into what I'd done, like, so that's the main thing. Job done. Everyone was happy.
It'd be a fairly big thing for a band as well, wouldn't it, to put their trust into a singer they've never met before, really.
I think they just heard me sing on one track, which was a demo, of a track we have, Quarters and Night, which we have a cracking demo of it, but we're going to go into the studio, and that's one of the next ones we're going to do after we get the ones that are already down out of the way. But yeah, they just basically heard me on that track, Harvey had played it for him, and they said, right, that's good, would he be interested in doing it? So yeah, it was a good experience, in fairness, and a little bit more studio time, and sure, working with different people. And
exactly, it all helps you grow as a musician. Helps get your name out there as well.
Yeah.
So moving on from the concerts now. If you could see any performer that's living or dead in concert, who would it be?
It would have to be Bill Hicks at Meeting.
I'll give it to you. I've never heard that before.
You've never heard of Bill Hicks, or you've never heard of anyone wanting to go see Bill Hicks?
No, I've never heard that answer before. Oh, I love Bill Hicks myself.
Well, sure, look at, he's an artist, isn't he?
Exactly. Thinking outside the box.
Yeah, Bill Hicks, just unreal, man. Absolutely. Even this, you could go back and listen to Bill Hicks now and just change some of the names, and he's on the fucking money every time.
Man was a genius.
Yeah, it's not so much comedy, it's more irony. That's what I always took out.
Yeah.
Isn't it ironic? To go off on them tangents, you know. But yeah, probably be Bill Hicks now, if I was going to. That'd be, I remember back in the day, I actually come, it's mad, because you know yourself, and that's another thing we're losing, actually, when we're talking about how music has changed. You used to be able to find things by finding things, if you get me. So
for instance, from listening to Tool is how I came across Bill Hicks.
Right.
On the inside cover of an email, like, I had the picture of Bill Hicks, and it was another dead hero.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where he first came into my consciousness. Do you know what I mean? The man was deadly.
Hmm.
That was back in like mid-90s. So you know what I mean? Or for instance, like let me see, King Crimson. I came across King Crimson because of Tool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Same with Gary Newman, Sefer Toxic. I started going back and listening to Gary Newman's older stuff and earlier stuff through Nine Inch Nails.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He would have been a massive influence, and which is funny because it was actually Ministry that got me to Nine Inch Nails. Do you listen to Ministry? Absolutely savage, man.
Not as much as I should.
There's a great documentary, Fixed, it's called.
All right.
And it's basically about them on tour. If it doesn't turn you off going on tour ever, this will.
Right.
It's a true representation of the road. Like, it is raw. Uncle Al knew it was rough. But unbelievable music, like unbelievable band. But yeah, they're them kind of things where people lead you to people. It's like my missus was, you know, in Tori Amos. I'm always winding her up, like, you know, she's just a poor man's Kate Bush.
Right.
Just a little thing, you know, yourself when you become a missus. So
here's one for you then. Speaking of Bill Hicks,
mm-hmm.
If he hadn't have died so young, if he was still with us today, what do you think he'd be like? Do you think he'd still be big, or would he have faded away?
I think, right, he would have been cancelled about 10 years ago.
Right.
The way things are now, oh my goodness, imagine the things he would say about gender.
Mm.
Imagine the things that he would say about, like, oh, I couldn't imagine the things he'd be locked up for. Be like Lenny Brooks in the 60s.
Yeah.
Carolyn would be another cracker now. He'd be another.
I was just going to ask you, I was just going to say you must be into Carolyn if you're into Hicks.
Oh, yeah. George Carolyn is another legend.
Mm.
But even listen to some of the stuff he said 10 years ago. Look at the world now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What he said about education was probably the best, one of the best lines he ever had. Where he said they want to educate you just enough so you can push the button, but you want stupid enough just so you don't have to ask any questions. So true that is nowadays.
It actually is. That's what I love about him, though. It was just a couple of sentences of pure genius, you know, and he got his point across perfectly, and he'd actually make you think, you know?
Yeah, that's it. That's like what's the Oscar Wilde trope that saying he had, some people have something to say and some people just have to say something. he was one of them, you know, he could wrap it up with a little bow on top in a quick little paragraph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine dinner with the two of them.
Oh.
That'd be some crap. I wonder who'd be the most cantankerous.
Yeah. Old Carolyn now, or Carolyn in his prime.
Yeah. Old Carolyn got fairly narky, didn't he?
He did.
He did, in fairness.
Still though, it's definitely a dinner I'd like to go to.
Yeah, so definitely Hicks would be the man I'd definitely bring back from the dead. Just even for a day, just to walk around and go, what do you think, Bill? Bill, what do you think of this? What do you think of this, Bill? He'd be looking at me going, I can't believe this would have been a fallback in. What is going on with you people? Fucking Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh.
Yeah. Did you not see what they did to you in 2008? What are you doing?
It's back to the whole Carolyn thing, though. Educated enough to push the button, but stupid enough to not ask why.
Yeah. Well, sure, look, man. You could go down the social media fucking rabbit hole here now if you really want it, but you know what I mean? And then you're back to, well, let's just say, right, that public relations has a lot to fucking answer for. And when I say public relations, I say it in the sense of propaganda is what I call public relations, because that's basically what it is.
Mm.
It's just that it was made beautiful by fucking Eddie Bernays, you know what I mean?
Mm.
They basically put a dollar price on, as Hicks used to say, they put a dollar price on fucking everything on the planet. and they've literally destroyed society.
Yeah.
And that's all I've seen in social media and it's a fucking shit show, dude.
Especially with social media. I'm always saying, ever since I started the podcast, take Instagram, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
When I started a page for the podcast on Instagram, I stopped logging into my own personal page as much. And eventually, after a couple of weeks, like now I'd say it's 4-5 months since I've logged into my personal page on Instagram, and I find myself way happier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going on and you're looking at people, and I don't know, they're not intending to, but they're impacting your mood and how you feel about yourself. You know, like social media isn't a good thing, really.
Well, let's just say for talk's sake, you would take Twitter, for instance, right?
Hmm.
Right. So Darcy and the like in Silicon Valley went and studied, and same with Facebook, Zuckerberg as well. They went to Vegas and studied basically the moods that people were getting from the near misses, the near hits, the anticipation. And what they basically learned was that basically on social media for toxic, when you get a like, you get a dopamine hit. Like, and they reckon it's like almost 70%, right? The feeling you get from the line of cocaine.
Really?
So Darcy and all these people are like pure manipulation. Like, And what they've done is they've basically got into people's heads, and everyone is rushing for the next like. Everyone is rushing for when you're getting your likes, when you're getting your retweets, when you're getting and I've seen it even with myself, even though I know all about it. Like, You know what I mean? Especially, obviously, I'm on it with the band or whatever. Like,
yeah.
So when people are giving you feedback and all, obviously, that's a good buzz. Like,
it is. And it becomes addictive. And you could see how you get wrapped up in it.
You get up, someone gets up to go up the toilet in the middle of the night, and the first thing they reach for is their phone.
Before you know, you have people waking up out of their sleep to check their phone.
So what would happen if we just took all our phones? If everybody took all their social media, took all their phones, right? Just basically just been off.
I've been saying it for a long time. I'd actually love to see that, even for 24 hours, just to see what society would do.
What would actually happen? Like, because every time, even when you're out now, you're in a restaurant. Well, when we used to be in restaurants or we used to be out, everyone's on their fucking phone. Like,
yeah.
You know, you see a family come in, sit down, they're having Sunday dinner or whatever in a restaurant, but 5 of them are on their phone, like, man and dad and the 3 kids. Like.
Yeah, exactly. Not one of them are actually conversing with each other.
That's it, like, but it's even what I've seen happen, and I see it even with my own kids, like, it's as if they can only interact with each other through line, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
They can't actually face-to-face interactions. Like, that's how we're supposed to be. As you're saying, you see things put up on Twitter, right? And it can be read maybe 2 or 3 different ways. Like,
yeah.
And the person that put it up, it could be just sarcasm with safer toxic. Someone reads it and they take offense from it. That's where social cues and facial expressions and, you know, that all comes into play. Like.
Yeah, that was the next point I was going to make. The younger generation nowadays, you know, that are just getting into social media, can you imagine when they get to their 20s, the social anxiety they will have and the lack of knowledge on how to act in a society or how to engage with people?
For sure. So like what Elon Musk was saying about it, it's almost an extension to our being now. Like, almost a part of your fucking, it's there in everyone's hand all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the likes of myself and maybe yourself, you didn't grow up in the era where you can surely just remember payphones, say, for talk's sake. Like.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, whereas, as you're saying, the generation that's coming through now, the woke generation, as we're going to call them, they're, do you know what I mean? Like, God knows where we're going to be in 20 years' time.
Yeah, it's a scary thought.
Well, especially the way that the media is at the moment. Like, sure, you don't know where the information, who's giving you the information, mainstream media, you don't believe what they're saying. Online, you don't know what's going on. So you don't know your arse from your elbow, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You don't know who to trust, who to believe, or what to believe.
Yeah.
It's all manipulation.
And this is where we are, like, and all basically they've created, right, is the short-term fucking dopamine-driven feedback loops. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's literally all it fucking is like.
Yeah.
And people, that's, just take your phones and put them in the bin.
I mean, 20, 30 years ago, they were able to have a perfectly up and running society without social media and smartphones. You know, it is possible.
Well, they said that it was supposed to make us more connected. Do you think that really has happened?
I'd say more disconnected.
Yeah, would you think we're more disconnected?
Oh, definitely. It's give the illusion of bringing us closer together, but pushed us further apart on a physical level.
It gave everybody a voice. Like,
yeah.
Like, for hundreds of thousands of years, we've evolved, right? We've lived in tribes of, you know, smaller groups. We're not all, I don't think the human species are supposed to be connected the way we're connected, because there's just so many conflicting. Like, it's like the old saying, if you lived where I live and you seen what I seen, then you'd believe what I believe. So somebody in India can't really be connected with somebody in fucking, I don't know, Ireland, will say, for talk's sake. They can, but the cultural differences, there's language differences, there's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you're online, as I said, there's no social cues, there's no, you know what I mean? Facial expressions. So things kind of get lost a little bit in translation as well. And that creates craziness then online. And then you have stuff like, you know, you have basically anything that happens in the world becomes, even if it's microcosm, it becomes a macrocosm online.
Yeah.
Whereas I've seen things, say, on mainstream media that haven't really blown up as much, but I've seen little things then that haven't blown up on mainstream media that have gone absolutely viral on the internet. Like, so, as you're saying, it's very confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. To try to spin the music into it then. What's your thoughts on the whole promotion and marketing online of a band nowadays? You know, when you have to do it yourself.
Well, yeah, well, that's the kicker. Like, the kicker is when you're trying to play music, write music and do other stuff and live your life. And then you're trying to find time, basically, which is almost nearly like a full-time job trying to promote your music. In an ideal world, if you had a manager or someone that was doing all that, so you would be great, like, for sure. But in general, the independent scene would surprise you. Quality of music is just up there as much as it is with mainstream music. Like, and I found some really good crew on Twitter, like, where there's a lot of bands there that are independent bands that support each other and are always, you know what I mean?
Knocking
people on the podcast or helping people out or whatever, getting their music out there, creating playlists, all that kind of stuff. I just give a shout out actually to a couple of them, like,
yeah, work with
This Side of Anarchy, Manny Grass, Operation Neptune Spear, Sound Ninja, Saboteurs, Ukrainium, what's it be there? Grunge Norris, Demon Scar, Honeybone Rush, Fate Hedge, Dreary, Dr. Centerman. There's literally, and if I've forgotten anyone, there's loads of the lads out there that are cracking musicians, cracking bands. IMRBS, 1A2C, there's Unreal. And then there's radio stations then that are also independent labels online, like, that are helping us out and playing all those bands that I was telling you about, giving them radio play, getting the music to ears. So the likes of Rock on the Rise Radio or FSTC Radio, Ollie, I think it's a German radio station, Midnight Fury on the Metal Grinder. She's an absolute gem. Big supporter of indie music, like, always. She has a show every Sunday night, midnight at the midnight hour, and then she has Midnight's Metal Grinder once a month. But people like that, you know what I mean, that are literally out there just helping people out, starting pocket, but even like yourself, man.
Yeah.
Just getting our music and getting stuff to ears, like.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of where it all comes in good, the internet. That's the good side of it, you know what I mean? Whereas, as you were saying, the friction is the bad side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charles. There's another one, Charles, at the Mind of Little Rage. That's a good metal podcast that we want to start checking out as well. There's loads of quality shows out there, quality music. It's just, as we were saying, you're a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's so much. Jeez, I had no idea though that there was so much, as you said, stations and then communities of independent bands supporting each other. That's really great to hear now that there actually is, you know.
And listen, man, the quality of the music and all is just as fucking good as mainstream metal.
Yeah, oh, I'd well believe it. Even on the show now, there's a couple of bands I've come across, and I was, as soon as I listened to them, and yourselves included, I was asking myself, why aren't these like on a fucking world tour and being played on every radio station? You know, as you said, it is just as good as mainstream.
Well, sure, it goes back to what we were saying about the technology. We're no longer on the Tascam 4-track, like, you know.
Yeah.
The technology has allowed us to be able to compete with you know, big studios and stuff.
That's where it's where technology is actually doing something good.
Yeah.
And helping.
That's where it worked in our favor.
Yeah. Yeah. So if there was one performer you could be locked in a room with for 24 hours, let's say a quarantine with, who would you pick?
Probably, there are quite a few now.
Right.
I'd say probably fucking John Lydon, Johnny Rotten.
Really?
I have some stories to tell. You can only imagine. So you seen him in the jungle that time with Jordan. Absolutely pure entertainment.
Yeah. Jesus.
So I think Lydon would have a few stories.
Oh, definitely. Young or old Lydon now, though?
We is now.
Oh.
Exactly, take him as he is now. He'd have more stories to tell.
True, true. That would be an experience now.
Who would you like to be locked in the room?
Who would I like to be? I feel like my answer changes from week to week. It always tends to go back to one or two, though. I'd like to spend a bit of time with Jim Morrison.
Right.
Just to, I don't know, I'd say he'd be interesting to hang out with. He'd probably fucking try kill you.
Ask him about his dad. So anyway, the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, exactly.
What was actually going on there?
For any of the listeners, go look into the Gulf of Tonkin and Jim Morrison's father's link to it.
Mm-hmm. He's the admiral on the ship, aren't he, they called it?
Yeah. It's funny how things like that link up.
There's a lot of that.
Here's one for you, actually. We'll just go on a little small tangent. You know, obviously, John Lennon and Mark David Chapman.
Right, yeah.
Have you heard this one about where he worked when he was in Hawaii?
Mark David Chapman?
Yeah.
No, go on.
When he was staying in Hawaii, he worked for a company. Now, he worked in a hospital as well, but before that, he worked in a company, and the owner of the company was, I can't remember your man's name, but you know your man that tried to kill Reagan because he was in love with Jodie Foster?
Oh, yes, the connection there.
Yeah, it was his father owned the company that Chapman worked for. It's a weird link.
Yeah. Wasn't there a weird link with Bush, one of the Bushes in that assassination as well?
Yeah. Yeah, and a link between the Bushes and the JFK assassination.
Oh, yes. There's many links in that one, Bo.
Oh, yeah, we could be here for weeks talking about them.
I've even stopped looking. Do you ever see the new JFK evidence? What's the point, lads?
Yeah.
Sure, even like down to Jack Ruby killing Oswald. No, like, come on. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. It's fucking...
It didn't feel like there's shady shit going on there now.
Yeah, like who can walk into...
Have you ever heard of the link then? Sorry for interrupting you, but have you ever heard of the link then between, I think it's Jack Ruby, the psychiatrist that treated him when he was brought in for arrest, I think it was, and Charles Manson?
I'm not sure now, but did it have something to do with Charles Manson and MK Ultra?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so.
That was that dude. I can't remember your man's name. He wrote the book. And he basically, it took him 20 years to write it. He just kept uncovering stuff. can't remember the name of the book now. It was actually on Joe Rogan.
Wasn't Chaos, was it?
I can't remember off the top of my head. Well, I remember the episode on Rogan, and I remember that link. It was something to do with the shrink. Asher, look it. It's fun, isn't it?
It is. It's mad, though. I can become fucking obsessive, though. There's been many stages in my life where I got into, the JFK assassination and ended up, searching for every book I could fucking find to read on it. And then just something else would pop up and you'd be wanting to find out.
All the different links.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And
yeah.
When it starts to look like everything is fucking linked to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
But you just go follow the money, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
just follow
exactly.
The money. That's all you have to do. Follow the money and the families. Mm. It's usually the same families that are linked to everything anyway, because they own most of the world anyway. So.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Seriously, you could fucking talk for weeks on stuff like that. You could actually start a whole different podcast on stuff like that. I know there's many out there already.
But even if you go back to say you started even in Ireland, carry on, that's been going on here for the last 20 years even.
Yeah.
You know, you could pull out fucking a fair few little nuggets. Even look what happened with Lama and the shenanigans going on there. You could go on obviously with what happened in 2008. There's some serious corruption in this country, as you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. But I always think of Ireland not being when it comes to corruption, that they're not quite as slick as the Americans are at covering it up.
It's a weird one. It's like Father Ted version of fucking politics here.
You hit the nail on the head.
They say, Asher, look at everything is going to be fucking grand, lads. And yeah. Everyone just goes, all right then. It's like all right then, Father. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in America, they're slick and they're cute and they're trying to bury it, but it all usually comes out the fucking end, like Enron, fucking, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pro-Health Crow or whatever the fuck it was called in the MK Ultra. Do you know what I mean? There's loads of stuff that comes out eventually. But.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the Irish attitude to it is pretty classic.
Yeah, it's almost like, look, what did you expect, lads?
That's it, sure, look at lads, everything is going to be all right. Grand, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Oh, the joys of living in Ireland.
Yeah. We know how long the government don't run us anymore now, and if it do, so.
Mm.
That's how it seems, anyway.
Yeah. So, one of the final questions I usually ask is a song that would appear on the soundtrack to your life. If you could narrow it down.
Yeah, it'd probably be, I'm sure same as I said, so many songs you could pull. But I thought about this one now, right? And it's like yourself, it changed my mind a couple of times. But I would probably say, right, as in favorite song is probably Nine Inch Nails' Burn, right?
Right.
But to go out on a song, it would probably be Fleetwood Mac, The Albatross.
Right. Interesting choice.
Just for the vibe.
Yeah. That's a good one.
It has a very going out kind of vibe to it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it'll probably be that one. And it was my wedding song, so.
Keep the wife happy.
This is a bit late with me.
I know it's hard to say, and we've kind of touched on it already, but what's next on the cards for Agency Panic?
Well, I got great news that the studio is opening back up, so the next plans for studio or for Agency Panic is to get into the studio, get vocals laid, get the next track mixed, get it mastered, and get it out.
Oh, brilliant.
Maybe get a video done for them. So that's pretty much where we're at the minute. We've got two tracks in there already, pretty much ready to rock, just have to be mixed and get some vocals down on them. So we're not a million miles away from getting one.
Perfect. That's great to hear. That'll be sooner than a lot of people thought.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Although probably not.
Good answer. You'd make a great politician.
Michal taught me well.
So at the end, I'm going to get you to tell us a bit about the song we're going to hear and introduce it. But before we get to that, is there any final thoughts you'd like to leave listeners with?
Don't forget to panic your sense of self-agency.
It's a very good one.
Thanks very much.
And now the song that's going to play us out tonight. It's actually my personal favourite. But do you want to tell us a bit about it?
This song is exactly about what I just said, about learning to basically panic your sense of self-agency. So enjoy, panic.
Perfect. Thanks a million for coming on the show. It was a real pleasure.
Appreciate it. It's an honor to come on. Thanks very much.
Looking interesting. Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here. Bye.